The topic for today is trading human lives and acceding to terrorist demands. And unfortunately, the reason why it's so necessary to talk about this week is this last week there have been two incidents about trade of hostages, of ransoms. And they actually ended up, unfortunately, in very different ways. There was the demands of IS, of the Islamic State, to trade a Iraqi woman who was a failed term suicide bomber mastermind in a Jordanian suicide attack in exchange for a Jordanian pilot who was one of the only captured from the airstrikes from the Allied forces against the Islamic State. And Jordan acceded. Jordan did do the trade. They accepted to trade the one-for-one, the pilot for this lady. Whereas at the same time last week, as we all know, there were two Japanese journalists who had demands for an extreme amount of money from Japan, and it seems that we don't know all the details, but it seems that they did not accede to the terms, and there was a video sent out yesterday, in fact, with the apparent death or the alleged death of the second terrorist, and this raises the question, and this begs the question of obviously when Jordan and Japan were not seeking halakhic guidance, but it demands the moral question of, you know, what the right thing is to do in this situation. And it perhaps gives us a window in or an opportunity to be able to discuss this in a less emotionally charged environment than perhaps a few years back when we were talking about Gilad Shalit, where it became a very, very personal, very, very emotionally heavy subject. And Israel, unfortunately, over the years has had to face many of these situations, many of these crises. And just for the sake of history, it wasn't just in the times of Israel. Throughout history, there have been many, many, many ransom questions. So what I'd like to do with you is just to learn a little bit this morning about the basic building blocks that are necessary to consider in the sugya. And what I'm going to say before we even start is that what we're not going to consider is the following. We are not going to consider the one element of this which is much more complicated, which is when you release a terrorist, the danger that provides society. That's a very complex shaila in and of itself as to what is the direct damage you're causing by releasing a terrorist. That's a huge halachic sugya, and perhaps we can do that at a different date, meaning the sacrificing of one life for the lives or the potential lives of others. That element of it is much more complex. What I'd like to deal with it today is very specifically is the actual notion of, or the limitations of redeeming people or redeeming captives. How far does that go? The exceptions to that. And to explore that in very practical terms, actually, in two very different poskim today who applied the logic very differently in the last few decades, and to try to get a sense of the very different parts of the spectrum that this provides for us. So without much further ado, first of all, before you understand what you're not allowed to do, you have to understand what we're expected to do. We're told that there's very little Gemara that's dedicated to this, but the Gemara talks very highly of the mitzvah of pidyon shvuim, of redeeming captives, or redeeming a person who's in a situation where they're being held for ransom. The Gemara actually starts off, this is in source 1, Gemara of Basra, on Chesam Abayis. This is actually in the middle of the sugyas of tzedakah, and what actually happens is that a lot of the halachas of pidyon shvuim actually find their way into Hilchos tzedakah, interestingly enough, in both the Shulchan Aruch and in the Rambam, fascinatingly enough. So the Gemara says the following: Amalei Rava l'Rabba Bar Meri. So Rava asked Rav Bar Meri the following question: Minohani mili da Amri Rabbana da Pidyon Shvuim Mitzvah Rabbahi. How do we know that Pidyon Shvuim is called a great mitzvah? Meaning it's a mitzvah plus, if you think about it that way. The reason why this is following off a statement that there was Hurmiz, who was the mother of a king of Shavur, and she said that I want to put away money into a trust fund, but I want it to be, the terms of the trust to be, that the money is dedicated to the greatest mitzvah possible. And so the Gemara said that that money should be earmarked for Pidyon Shvuim. So the Gemara is now asking, where do we know that? Meaning, why is that suddenly so important? So the Gemara says, Dichsev, it says in Yirmiyahu, V'haya ki yamru elecha ana neitzei, when they said, where should we go? V'amart aleihem, koy amar Hashem, asher lamaves lamaves, asher lacherev lacherev, asher larav larav, asher lashevi lashevi. Hashem says, whoever's going to death, go to death. Whoever's going to the sword, go to the sword. Whoever's going to famine, to famine. And whoever's going to captivity, to captivity. So you see four things which are highlighted in this pasuk, four terrible things. Rabbi Yochanan says, Rabbi Yochanan, it's climatic, meaning apparently what's the worst of all of these four things is captivity, worse than death even, worse than starvation. The Gemara goes on to explain the reason is because usually, unfortunately, captivity actually incorporates all of them, right? So in many cases, all the other worst things that can happen are really unfortunately a part of captivity. That's why it's so important. So okay, it's so important, but where do we know? Meaning like okay, so is there a specific mitzvah in the Torah to redeem captives, to redeem people who are incarcerated? Not so simple. Any sources that come to mind? Okay, it's interesting. Avraham Avinu goes and saves Lot. He saves his nephew from the four and five kings, right? That's meaning the way he acts serves as a model. It's going to be a very interesting model to come back to in just a few minutes. But the Torah itself doesn't explicitly expect us or tell us to do that. That's more like an example. Now, by the way, that's an important point because a lot of the things we learn from the Torah are prescriptive, meaning the Torah says, do such. But some of the things are more descriptive, which is, watch what the Avos did so you should know. Right? But it wouldn't have the same structure as a mitzvah then. There is no specific command, but the Rambam beefs it up with a lot of different ones. The Rambam says the following in source 2. Pidyon shvuin kodim l'parnosos aniyim ulechanoisam. He says, if you're going to have a triage between tzedakah or redeeming people, it's most important to redeem people first. Why? There is no greater mitzvah than redeeming captives. Because somebody who is in captivity is a person who is hungry, who's thirsty, who lacks clothing, and stands in tremendous danger. Right, so we need to do everything possible to save them. So the Torah tells us that if a poor person comes past you and says, can I have something, and you close your hand, there's an issur involved in that. You shouldn't close your hand to loans. Now, that's interesting. So the Rambam says that if that's true about a poor person, then how much more so is it for a person who's suffering more than a person in poverty? That's how he applies it. Right, if a person is watching and is able to do something, and there's another person in captivity, you're standing on the blood of your brother because potentially he stands to lose his life. Don't have him be worked hard in your face. And you also avoid doing the positive command of opening your hand to somebody else. So it's the greatest form of tzedakah. You're not giving him, you're saving him. And letting your brother live with you. Look at this. The Rambam basically, when he looks at this notion of pidyon shvuim, he doesn't look at it that the Torah needs to command you. He's saying that it's clear from the context and culture of the Torah that this is what you're expected to do. Meaning the Rambam isn't pinpointing it as a specific thing. It's the way we live. That's why there's so many mitzvot which relate specifically to this, says the Rambam. He says, there's no greater mitzvah than pidyon shvuim. So it sounds like if you know in the regular plateau of mitzvot, there's a rise when it comes to pidyon shvuim. It's of a greater importance, which means to say that you would expect that at all expenses you would need to do it, no matter what the considerations are. It's important to do pidyon shvuim. But there are a few considerations. There are a number of considerations when it comes to pidyon shvuim. Certainly in our time, when what the requests usually are not usually money. The requests, certainly that we faced in the last 6 decades, is more a request of the release of terrorists, where that makes it a little more complex than simply money. Because over here, this has bigger social implications, big implications for the future as well. So let's explore a little bit of the limitations, and then each at each point reflect backwards on the decisions made. First, we know there's a famous Mishnah in Gittin. This is where it all starts. The Mishnah in Gittin says, on Memhamud Aleph in source 3, Masnissin, ein poidinus ashwin yoser al-kadei de mehem. You cannot redeem captives for more than their value. Very hard to pinpoint what the value is, what the going rate is for ransom. Right? But a person cannot spend more, an exorbitant amount for a captive, mimnei tikkun ha'olam, because of tikkun ha'olam. This is the section in Gittin which discusses, all these Mishnahs discuss tikkun olam, which means to say, not talking about, if you know, fixing bathrooms in South America. Tikkun olam in this case over here means, tikkun olam means that we are concerned about a particular social psychological outgrowth or that's going to happen regarding this. We want to make sure that there's going to be a society that's going to run well. And if we allow people to do this, there's going to be a problem. It's going to break down some part of society over here because of this. And similarly, the Mishnah says, "Vein mavrichin es hashvuyim ibnei tikkun ha'olam." We don't allow some of the captives to escape, leaving some of them behind. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel omer ibnei tikkun mibtayg takanas hashvuyim, and Rabbi Gamliel says it's for different reasons because of takanas hashavim. By the way, on this last point, which we're not going to focus on so much, going back where one of the times this arrives is in 1976 in Entebbe, right in Mivtza Yohanatan. So Yohanatan, that actually, it is interesting to note that what happened was when they made the Entebbe raid, there was one lady who was in the hospital because she had trouble breathing, and she was not taken out, and she was murdered afterwards by the Ugandans. Right? So, meaning, you realize what the reason for this is that when you're not allowed to take out some of the captives is because what's going to happen is the repercussions will be on the remaining people, right? The mission is concerned is the remaining people will be incarcerated into a further level. But unfortunately, in the way that we deal with it now, it's the revenge will be taken out upon them. Actually, interestingly enough, in Entebbe, the Ugandans who were very upset about what occurred actually went and took revenge and killed a number of Kenyans. They killed a number of Kenyans for the amount of soldiers that they lost because Kenya allowed refueling for the Israeli aircraft. So, I mean, there was the spirals of revenge that went on, terrible. But for the purposes of our mission, there's two takonos. One is don't take out a partial amount of captives. And number two, and that was number two. And number one is don't pay more than their value. What is the concern here? What is the concern that we're not supposed to be doing? Why can't we spend more money than they're worth? What's the issue? What's the tikkun olam over here?
Encouragement.
Right, so it sounds like an encouragement issue, yeah?
It'll give an over advantage to the person who captured them.
Say again?
It'll give an over advantage to the people next time.
Why an advantage? Meaning you're giving them more money?
Yeah.
Interesting. Now, that interesting, Yehuda, your point isn't brought up in the postgame specifically with the money, the extra money. Certainly in the case that we're dealing, where you're fueling a terrorist organization, potentially. The concerns were more actually practically on the side of the people having to pay. The Gemara actually questions it itself. The Gemara says in a very short section, So the Gemara considers two possibilities. Maybe possibility number one is, if they have such a high price tag, you can't expect the community to pay, because never mind the future. Just because of right now, how can you put this financial burden on the community for such a high price for an individual? How can you expect the community to pay such things? That's option number one. The option number two, which is one which we are more intuitively connected to, is that it's going to encourage future kidnappings. If you're going to pay up money, and you're going to pay up good money, and they realize that the Jewish community is so united that it does all these kinds of things, it's going to simply encourage this basic incentivization. It's going to encourage future problems. So that's the question that the Gemara presents. The Gemara question is whether the issue over here of tikkun olam is the now or the future. Right? That's what the Gemara questions. Toshma, is there enough community? Does it make a difference what the concern is? Yes, says the Gemara. The potential difference is the following. Toshma, let's hear a proof. Delevi bar dargo, parko labarte betlesa alfi dinri zahav. There was a gentleman by the name of Levi bar dargo. Levi bar dargo redeemed his daughter who was in captivity for 13,000. Right, betleisa alfi dinari zahav, for 13,000 gold pieces. That sounds a little exorbitant, right? It sounds, we don't know exactly, but it sounds very exorbitant. So why is this a proof? Why is this a proof in either direction? Let's think about this carefully. Here you have Levi bar Darga, who's redeeming his daughter, and by the fact that he redeems his daughter, it's a proof to one of the reasons that are suggested in the Gemara here.
Oh, he did it himself.
He did it himself, so what's the issue?
It's a family, it's more shocked to him, it's like the
occupational
thing.
Okay, so I actually want to come, Baruch, your point I'm going to come back to in a moment, it doesn't make a difference who the person is, right? That's going to be, but in over here, the acting proof over here is?
He did it himself, he didn't go on the tzibur, right. They weren't concerned about it, they didn't stop him from doing so, because if the concern is a general issue, they should have stopped him from doing it.
Great, if the concern is...
Your money, you spend your own money, you do it.
Exactly, if the concern is now that you're going to put a financial burden on the community which is too much to hold... So you know what? He's a rich man. He can do what he wants with his daughter. He can pay however much he wants. It's not going to affect the community. But if the concern is encouraging future problems, it doesn't make a difference who's financing it. In the end of the day, they're still going to do it. They're going to find other individuals who's got wealthy daughters and do whatever they want. Right? So therefore, this act of the Gemara says this shows you that there must be the reason is because of reason number one. That's why the individual could pay out. As the Gemara suggests, Nabai defers and says, how do we know? Levi bar Darga isn't one of the Tanaim, he isn't Rav Levi bar Darga, he was an individual in society. He could have done it because he was extremely emotionally in pain, but it doesn't mean to say that he did the right thing. So we don't know. The Gemara leaves that hanging. So what is important over here is that at this point in time, the halakhic outcome of whether you say it is a concern of the financial impact or whether the concern is the future encouragement may be, as can an individual be involved in the process of paying more than Yosef al-Dameyam. That's the way the Gemara seems to leave it and leaves it hanging. The Gemara doesn't really answer this at this point in time. How do we paskin? How do we paskin in Shulchan Aruch and Rambam? The Rambam says the following, and this is Halacha in Source 5. The Rambam can be found in Matnos Aniyim, again in the section dealing with Tzedakah in Perek Ches Yud Beis. He says, Ein point in Sashvuyin, we cannot redeem captives for more than their value because of Tikkun Olam. Right? Because, what's the reason? Number two, because you're worried about the future incentivization that is going to be involved through this process. So the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, similarly in Saul 6, Ein point in Sashurim Yasim and Kedai Demeyam, you take an Olam, Shalai Yu Avim Moisrim Atzmon Aleyam Lishboisam, that they shouldn't do this. By the way, a number of years ago in Mexico, this was a real issue. Right? In Mexico, the Jewish community were paying money for, there was a lot of kidnappings, and they realized that the Jewish community is a great target, because unfortunately, we care about each other. I mean, unfortunately for the situation, fortunately for us. But because we care so much, therefore we become a very good target for ransom. And this is the concern that the Gemara presents to us now. So right now, if there's a situation of, let's go back for a moment to the Gilad Shalit instance, where there's 1,027 terrorists being released for one Israeli, I think that pretty clearly classifies as Yoser Mikadei Demeyam, right? It's Mikadei Domov in that case. It sounds very much like much more than his value. And by the way, it's very hard to know what Kadei Domov is. How do you put a price on a person? But I would wonder if this last week wasn't a good example of that. Meaning when the demands of the Islamic State were for one Jordanian pilot, for one terrorist, I wonder if that's perhaps the most perfect example of Kadei Domov, where the concern isn't even of the missioner, of Tikkun Olam, doesn't even come into account, because here you have a person who's one of the highest trained military personnel, for a person who's a mastermind of mass murder, right? These are both people who are of extreme value to each of the different sides, but they're one for one, right? So that would seem to me, and there's an indication I noticed in Rav Avadia, which we're going to come to later, that this might be true. But in the case of Gilad Shalit, it seems that if you're to stop here at this point in time, it would seem that there is no dispensation to start redeeming for Yosef Mikadei Demeyam. If we were to stop at this point in Shulchan Aruch, yes.
I mean, Tikkun Olam is a subjective term, because I think that with Gilad Shalit, it improved the collective psyche of the Israeli people. Uh-huh. And that was kind of the thing. It was such people were obsessed with it. So the fact that the exchange took place, obviously it's obvious that the Demeyam aspect is meaningless.
Very interesting. So, meaning, how does community morale fit into this? Coming back to that, and I want to come back to that in just a moment, because we're going to discuss the words of Rav Avadi Yosef and Rav Shlomo Aviner on that particular topic in just a few minutes. And just to see, you have to think about the community morale if the general institution was different, in general. Meaning, before we even get to the point of the redemption, but beforehand, if the policy was different, what would it do to society? That's that we need to take a step backwards rather than reactively dealing with the situation that presents itself, unfortunately.
The U.S. government apparently follows the Rambam because yes. they criminalized individuals.
Correct. So in general, U.S. policy is, with a few exceptions, U.S. policy is we don't deal with terrorists, right? And it seems to be a pretty hard and fast rule, except for a few exceptions, which the media have been pointing out in the last week. But
individuals can't do it. In other words, family members who want to pay a ransom...
Oh, not right.
Are subject to charges of...
Interesting, meaning even individuals. Very interesting.
Individuals.
Very interesting.
Have they brought any charges?
So then you're saying that there's no value at all. The U.S. government is saying there's no minimal value that's worthy of an exchange.
Well, certainly the values that are being charged towards them are... They're saying in general, we don't deal.
That's not true in their own right. policy. They've always, historically, the U.S. government has always exchanged people. They exchanged prisoners with the Soviets.
Correct, but that's not terrorists.
They were always...
You're right, but that's countries. When you're dealing with countries or terrorists, so that's what seems to be the issue. But now we need to deepen the plot, because clearly this is not the end of the story. Exceptions, and the question is how do you apply the exceptions? We told the following. The Gemara tells us in Gittin and Chesam al-Alev that there's a story, a famous story. Now, it sounds like a garata, but actually it has very important ramifications in halacha. The Gemara tells us later on, source 7. Tana Rabbanan, Ma'atzah Rabbi Yeshua ben Rabbi Chananya, Shehalach l'krach gadol shebaroimi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, who lived at the time of the destruction of the temple, went to a great city in Rome, which probably means Rome. Right, Rome means at this point in time the Roman Empire. So he went to the great city of the Roman Empire, which is probably Rome. Amr loy tinok echad yesh bebeis ha'asurim yofe einayim v'toy ro'i v'kesus ha'isov sudurim lo taltalim. His beautiful child staying in prison with these locks on his hair and these beautiful eyes. So, what does this sound like, by the way? It sounds very similar to something we say on Tisha B'Av. Remember that you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's the two children. The two children who were found in prison and they were left in the room, the two masters wanted them to essentially mate. That's why they were treating them, to have beautiful slave children. And they found they were both the children of the Kohen Gadol, right? It happens to be that story immediately follows this. There's three stories about the beauty of what a Jew was and the lack of recognition of that of the Roman Empire. So this story is all the destruction sugyas. Nun ches m'dalef in gitzin, right? So this he finds his child in jail. Holach v'amar al pesach beis asurin. He stood at the entrance of the prison. And he says, "Mi nosan," quoting the pasuk in Yeshayahu, "Mi nosan mishiso Yaakov Yisrael leboizim." Who gave us to such a situation of being tormented? Are being plundered. Ana oisa tinoik v'omar haloi Hashem zuchatonu v'loi avu bidrachov haloich v'loi shamu b'toirasoi. And the child himself answered with a pasuk saying it was because we sinned. Meaning that's how knowledgeable the child was. Omar muftachani boy shemoyre hara b'Yisrael. He says, I know that I can see from the way this child's acting, he's going to be an incredible teacher. Ha'uvda, he takes an oath. He says, any amount that they say, I'll pay. And in fact, that was the case. He paid a large sum of money. In fact, he did become a teacher. And who was he? One of the great Tanoim. And that's the end of the story. So wait a second. If the only conclusion we have is that we say at the end of the Gemara, for whatever reason, you can't pay Yosef Me'adamehem, it seems pretty clear from the story that he did do that. It seems pretty clear that Rabbi Yosef Me'adamehem was paying a lot of money over here. Yes?
You have a different measure of work. He was worth so much more.
Oh, interesting. So why is he worth so much more?
Because
he... Okay, so the question now is, it doesn't make a difference who the person is. Right? So maybe his worth goes up. But again, this is why it becomes hard to measure. It's a little bit subjective in the sense of how do you measure human value. But maybe he is different in the sense that he's special. We see this is a prodigy, right? We know that this person is going to have an impact, an unparalleled impact. Do that doesn't make a difference. Very difficult question. Tosfos asks it and has three answers. One, which relates to the suggestion that Mark and Steve just made, which is the following. Tosfos in Gittin says, starting in source 9. This is on Mem Hei Amud Aleph. I'm starting from the second line of the Tosfos. It says, one second. Rabbi Yeshua. It's the second, towards the end of the second line of the in source 9. Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. Rabbi Shimon Chananya paid a huge amount of money for that child. He says, number one is, because he was so great, because he was such a wise child, that's why it necessitated paying more than his value. Notice, by the way, he still thinks it's more than his value. He doesn't say that his value went up. It may have gone up there so much, but the price still went skyrocketing. So you still can avoid the rule there. He says, or could have been, because this is at the time of the destruction of the big Mikdash, this rule doesn't apply. Why not? Think about what's going on over here. Why would the rule of not encouraging future captivities not apply over here? Why? So, but
it's
spending
more money.
It's
growing the
community. There is no future for the community.
At this point in time, everybody's being taken into captivity. Unfortunately, at this point in time, there's no encouragement. They're taking everybody down away in chains anyway. So it's not like you're creating any different social phenomenon. That's what the Tosfos suggests. Interestingly enough, in the previous Tosfos, the Tosfos actually listed in source 8. Tosfos also addresses the issue, but adds in one other option. This is the very top of the page, actually, in 3. The Tosfos says the following. He says, Kolmoan Shepos can love all the money. He says, why? Ki ikar sakonos nefashos. And when there is a threat to life, poidin shivuyin yoser akadei de mayhem. When there is a life-threatening situation, then yes, you can spend more money than they're worth to free them. That's revolutionary. So as Tosfos is saying, that if it is a life-threatening situation, that overrides. Now, what the logic over here is, let's just decompartmentalize this for a moment. The logic is the following. What's the reason why you're not allowed to spend more money than necessary? Because of the Tikkun Olam. Who instituted the Tikkun Olam? Who put that rule into place? Was Chazal, Chachamim. They thought they saw a certain social incentivization, and they said, let's not do this. But we know there's a rule in the Torah that Pikuach Nefesh overrides all mitzvahs. Certainly Tikkun Olam. Right? Certainly Tikkun Olam would be overridden. So says Tosfos over here, if there's a threat to life, then of course one would have to do this. Now, problem is, well, there's some raised eyebrows. What's the problem?
It's always
like this. That's the problem, meaning... Is it always, or is it not? Right? That's the question which is being raised over here. Right? Is every situation of captivity, yes or no, endangering life?
No, you said the first point you made was that it was the greatest mitzvah.
Bingo. Great. Great. So what Dr. Steve is asking is, you come back to the Gemara in Baba Basra, and the Gemara in Baba Basra says, why is it a mitzvah rabbah? It's a mitzvah rabbah, says the Gemara, because it is the worst of all. It includes... starvation and lack of clothing and death, which means to say that it already is taken into account the fact that it's death. And nevertheless, there was a tikkun olam made on top of that anyway. Right? That's exactly what the Ramban asks over here. The Chiddush Ramban on the Gemara in Gittin in source 10, just to see the words inside. He says, Mom and Shapoiskin Lai, that was the case of Rabbi Yeshua and Chananya redeeming that child in Rome. Omru Loizazmi Shomat Shapidova Momon Harab, Yeshlama de Hassan Bashas Kurban Abayas, Livelekid Lo Migru Bay, Tve, Share Kulam, Beshevi Holk. He says, look, it was the time of the destruction, everybody was going into captivity. I'm dropping down a line, Vyesh Omrim, in the abbreviation. And some say, Dehohechot Iko Chashash de Misa Poidinoisa Bechomom and Shiacholin Liftoisam. Some say, meaning the Tosfos Academy suggests that if there's a life-threatening situation, you can do whatever is necessary. It doesn't make sense to chol shevi kulo isnu bay. Every situation, exactly as you point out, every situation of shevi, in fact, incorporates this, and that's what the Ramban says. Yes.
My understanding is that in Mexico, it's a business.
Yes.
It's not really
great. Excellent. 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 Excellent.
Civilly.
Right, I mean, so...
It could be at the time of the Rambam, but that some, you know, that it's changed, that it is a business.
Excellent, right, so it's not so simple. Not so simple over here. So this is where we left with the poskim. It happens to be, how do we poskim in this case? And we're coming back to this, coming back to your point in just a moment, to apply this. How do we poskim? The Shulchan Aruch, in fact, says, when quoting this, if you go back to the original Shulchan Aruch we had, which is in source 6, Shulchan Aruch and Yoredeh says, we read the first line, which is that there's a Tikkun Olam. He says, Aval, second line, Aval Adam Yachol Liftois Es Atzmai B'chol Mashir. It's that person can go to any expenses for himself. V'chen Etal Mechacham, that was the Chacham Uflag, meaning a leader of a generation. V'afilo En Etal Mechacham Ela Shu Talmid Charif V'efshar Shiyeh Adam Gadol, or a person who has the potential of becoming a great leader. Poin Enosa B'domim Merubim. What does he leave out? He leaves out Sakonos Nevosh. He leaves out imminent danger. It sounds like that the Shulchan Aruch is leaning more towards the opinion of the Ramban and Dr. Steve, which is that you can't redeem a person when that danger doesn't really mitigate the situation. That's what it sounds like. Now, how does this apply itself in halacha? These are some of the building blocks. How does this actually apply itself? So there are a lot of people who speak about this, a lot of significant people who speak about this. I'd like to focus on two people today and just discuss it a little bit with you outside. The personality number one who discussed this in depth was Rav Avadia Yosef, and Zichrono Livracha. He actually has an entire essay called Mivtza Antebi Bahalacha, Operation of Antebi in Halacha. He responded to that, and he divides it up into three sections. The first section of 16 sections, okay, because you know, in a Kedarka Bakodesh, there's not a posek who's not mentioned on the topic. And he spends talking about the idea of risking lives of some to save the lives of others, which is part of the topic which we don't have the time to deal with this morning. That's a very big part of the operation which he dealt with. But the number two was our sugya, which is redeeming captives for more than their value. So the Rav Avadia Yosef says that although it is true that in the Shulchan Aruch itself you will find that we paskin, we leave out the idea of Sakonis Nefosha as being so significant, he says a very interesting thing. He says, what was the problem of the Ramban? What was the problem that the Ramban and Dr. Steve just presented a moment ago? Was that every case of captivity has implicitly included in it death or the threat of death. It happens to be that when the Me'iri, rather the Rabbeinu Me'iri, was commenting on this sugya, He quotes this opinion and very subtly diffuses it. And he diffuses it saying, and as Mark had pointed out, that in fact there are different types. There are different types of captivity. There are types where it's only money-based. And when it's money-based, where the people are only seeking money, they are not interested in harming the hostages unless it's going to cause more of a incentivization for getting the money. And this, by the way, throughout history, these are the more common types of ransoms, where people really wanted money. In that case, we'll call it stam shvuyim. And then there's the case where they're actually threatening them. So says the Miri, in fact, there's different types. And therefore, the Ramban's claim, which was that all shvuyim incorporate danger, is not true. Some of them do, some of them don't. In the cases where they do, that's where you can go all out, because we're concerned about pikuach nefesh, which is going to override. That's what Rav Avadia says, and he goes on to bring a slew of poskim who paskin, in fact, that you can. That one can, in the case where there's danger, imminent danger to the captive, one can do what's necessary. The one poskim he mentions, which is very fascinating, is the Yamshel Shlomo, the Maharshal. The Maharshal is dealing with a particular phenomenon at in his day, which is in fact the pirates. There was, for many years, the Mediterranean pirates, and they would go from coastal city to coastal city, and they would capture people, and they captured many Jewish communities, unfortunately, and ransomed them for immense sums of money over the years. And so the Maharshal responds, and this is the end of his large halachic discussion, and he says the following. This is in source 11, to be found in Yamshel Shlomo in Gittin. He says, Va'idna, Anshei Gomle Chasadim Be'eretz Turguma Va'asmuchim Lohem. So he says, these very generous people who live in Turkey, and the surrounding Ottoman Empire, Poidim Hashvim Yoser V'yoser Mikadeh Demeim. They carry on paying more and more and more for their captives. Behind the mevatrin al duchkayu de tzibur shelahem, Hashem yosif al schoram. They say, you know what? It is a financial burden, but we're prepared to override that because of our concern. And he says, Hashem should bless them. Upalim lifnei Hashem tzafun pulasam lifnei Hashem tzafun b'olam haba. He says their reward is going to be waiting for them, that they were willing to overcome any financial constraints for this. Gam b'olam hazel olam arad. Sorry, gam b'avosenu harabim. Nismatu Yisrael b'gola. Unfortunately, now that we're this crushed or lowly nation in exile, v'yesh lachus al yeser apleta shloi tich be'gachalas Yisrael. Because the concern is, if you let everybody go into captivity, we're going to have less and less Jews. Every soul counts. V'gam la'es hazos machbidim al Yisrael yisurim v'inuyim, and we are suffering terribly in this exile. Lakufam kedei lavod aradas, where when people are taken by these pirates, they're going to be in a religious threatened environment. V'la'asos melochas b'shabbos shalot tzorech, and they're going to have to be forced to transgress Shabbos. Gam im lo yiftu osam ikol amechash l'roya levavam, shlo yargu osam, uvesakonos nefoshos poedin yosemi kedei demeyim. And he says that in such a case, we do in fact redeem them for more than their value. So the Yam Shel Shlom among many are the people who say that although it is omitted from Shulchan Aruch, when there is danger, when there is potential danger and even spiritual danger, right, because over here is where the concern what's going to happen to these captives, that overrides this tikkun olam and a person will be able to do this. In fact, then he goes on to quote the famous case. This is one of the earlier sources we have for it in Halacha, of the Maharam Mirutenberg, very famously in Germany, one of the leaders of the generation, the leader of German Jewry at the time, the teacher of many of the poskim that we know, the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, his Rebbe was the Maharam Mirutenberg, and the Maharam Mirutenberg was captured by, he had plans to go to Eretz Yisrael, and Rudolf, who was the king of that particular area, captured him, put him in a tower in Eisenhorn, and demanded an exorbitant amount of money. And the community said, of course, this is Chacham Muflag, this is the best, this is the leader of the generation. And they raised the money, and the Maharam says, no, thank you. He said, I won't accept your money to be ransomed. And in fact, such was the case, he remained the rest of his days and died in captivity, actually, because there's a refusal to accept the money of the ransom. And the Marshal says, but wait a second, he is a Chacham Muflag. So the Marshal says that, you know what he was doing? It was a Hara'as Shah. He did a Hara'as Shah because he realized if he were to accept it, even though he really had the halachic grounding to do so, what would happen? Who would be the next target? Would be the next leader of the generation. So what did he do? In fact, he held off, and because of that, even though he lost his own Torah, and he wasn't able to preside over the community for a number of years because of that, he was saving the future of Jewry. In fact, his student, the Rosh, had to flee because he was also a target, fled to Spain, along the way wrote his corpus of halacha on all of Gomorrah, the Rabbeinu Asher, which is at the back of the Gomorrah. It says the Maharshal, this case of the Maharam Mirutenberg was an exception. He had the grounds to do so for two reasons, really, because of perhaps the threat and also because of his status. Rav Avadia Yosef is very clear that it becomes that when it comes to a potential sakonos nefoshos, that clears the playing field. Anything is the rules are regular until you have a case of threat of death, and unfortunately, in many of the cases of the hostage situations that we deal with, there is the potential threat of death. Certainly, in Tebi, which is the case he was dealing with then, was potential of threat of death. That was their threat from July 1st; they would start killing. And in fact, when it came to the Gilad Shalit, ordeal, the Shas party, which was ruled based on halacha, consulted before the vote, consulted Rav Avadia Yosef, and he was in favor of the release based on the considerations which he presents. And in fact, he said he has many considerations, but the primary one is that when it comes down to sakonos nefashos, that overrides the tikkun olam over here. And he goes through many, many poskim, and he goes backwards and forwards and diffuses a number of the people who disagree with his idea. And so he says, bottom line, one is able to be pointed to them. And he also pointed out in a footnote that in the case of Entebbe, the demands were, does anybody remember what the demands were? What were the demands for the release of those Israeli citizens or those Jews? It was 40 terrorists. How many people were captured? If I'm not mistaken, there were over 100. So he pointed out that maybe in that case, anyway, it's not Yosef Mikedeme de Mayhem. So the whole situation doesn't start, which is interesting because unfortunately the price has gone up, as you've seen in the last few years. But be it as it may, he thinks that there was no concern from this perspective in Entebbe. However, if you want to swing the ball in completely the opposite direction, Rav Shlomo Aviner has a discussion about this, and he says something quite remarkable, and this is really the opposite end of the spectrum. He points out, in general, Pikuach Nefesh is something which we understand is drop everything you're doing and attend to. That's the way we understand Pikuach Nefesh. Shabbos, Pikuach Nefesh, Shabbos is dispensed with at least momentarily, or perhaps Hutra, Dechuya, whichever way you want to look at it. But there, whatever else it is, Pikuach Nefesh overrides except for three cardinal sins. Okay? He says, but that's not true when it comes to society. That's true when you are the individual watching somebody else who's in a potential life-threatening situation. Is there the same expectation on a community, on a government, for Pikuach Nefesh? He says, not necessarily so. Otherwise, you know what happened? Is the Israeli government would have to dedicate all tax money to specifically hospitals and ransoms. Meaning, they should really essentially cancel their budget for education, cancel their development budget, all to put their funds into saving lives. And that's not the case. The case is that they divide their budget, and there's certainly a lot which is placed on security, and Israel's got one of the greatest security budgets, the biggest security budgets among all the nations of the world, 6% right now of the GDP. In the meantime, he says that it's clear that society doesn't operate under the same conditions of Pikuach Nefesh as an individual would in responding to Pikuach Nefesh, simply because society needs to run. He bases it on a Chasam Sofer. Very interesting point, number one. So you may tell me that imminent danger is going to be sufficient, but in the end of the day, it doesn't matter, because when it comes to a government, you don't have the same considerations. He takes it further. He points out that really, the way to Paskin is like Tosis in the Shulchan Aruch. I apologize, one second, like the Ramban, and when Sakonos Nefoshes doesn't make a difference at all. And therefore, the two reasons of the Gemara are really still applicable. Reason number one is the burden on the community, and number two is the reason which is of the future encouragement. He says, when it comes to the burden on the community, the Mishnah was talking about when they have to pay a huge amount of money, that's a terrible burden. He says, imagine now you're releasing terrorists. What's the burden on the community? Is you're facing these people who know the Israeli system now, they know the prison system, and they're going back, and they've spent all this time just twiddling their thumbs thinking about how they're going to do this again. And he points out that in the Statistics Bureau, 185 Israeli citizens were killed by terrorists who were released. Which means, and that's unfortunately, that's a number which grows. Meaning, it is clear and hard and fast evidence that releasing people is a burden on the community just for the release, never mind the future. Never mind the fact that Hamas said, the moment that Gilad Shalit was released, that they're going to do this again because it was so lucrative. Right? I mean, never mind that point, says Rav Aviner. So what's the solution then? Meaning, so according to Rav Aviner, so what are you going to do? Meaning, you can't negotiate because it's Yosef al-Mikedeh de Mayhem, and he holds the Gemara is as tight and as strong as ever before, so what do you do? So he says that's an interesting thing. Coming back to the model that we see by Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu has his nephew Lot, who is captured. What does Avraham do? Does Avraham sit down and say, I'm going to pool my resources, I'm going to speak to my neighbors, I'm going to negotiate with these four kings? What does he do?
He goes to war.
He takes everybody he can, and he goes and wages war. He doesn't negotiate. In Parshas Chukas, what happens? Israel's sitting there in the desert, and this nation, this unknown nation, actually happens to be the Amalekim, dressed up as the Canaanim. Come and take from them one slave, a Chevy. And the Rashi tells us that in fact that a person was a maidservant. What do Israel do? They negotiate. What do? They go to war. They decimate Amalek. Meaning, what's the response? What's the response to a hostage situation, says Rav Aviner? Is you fight at all costs. And in fact, he points out that when it comes to negotiations were only an option when we lived in a exile reality where we had no other option. When we have a sovereign government and we have an army, the response to a captive situation hostages is you fight for them. In fact, it quotes going back to 1970. In 1970, there was a TWA flight which was taken hostage in Jordan, and on that flight was Rav Yitzhak Huttner, the Rosh Hashiva over here in America, And he was taken captive, and they released in stage. They released the women and the children, and they had the men. And it was a three-week ordeal, very, very long and grueling ordeal. And there were people over here in America who wanted to raise any amount of money necessary to redeem him, because after all, like the Maharam, they said, this is a chacham muflag. This is a exceptional case, any money in the world necessary to spend on this. And Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky at the time says, absolutely not. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, just to see his actual words in the source over here, this is in source, this is quoted by Rav Shecht, in fact, in source 13, on the second column on the left, he says, I'm about seven lines up, he says, Otan oz kenegdo agon Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky zal, in source 13 on the left, you can't use this calculation. You only have negotiations when there is peacetime. It's wartime. In wartime, you don't negotiate. Over here, you are now supporting the enemy in the middle of a war. Right? One of the reasons why the Islamic State was asking for a lot of money this last week was because it helps their operations if they're getting a lot of money from Japan. They need the equipment, they need the finances, they need the PR, so they need money. But in a wartime, you're financing that operation. Says Rav Aviner, it is very clear that the moral standard of the army fighting, if they know that they're going to be crippled by a hostage situation, is going to go into a terrible quagmire. If people know that we're prepared to negotiate lives, what that's going to be is it's going to lead to a situation where you have the Gilad Shalit, where you're going to have people that break the nation. In fact, he quotes a Medrash that says that when Tzidkiyahu HaMelech was taken captive, he should have killed himself. That meaning, the Medrash says that Tzidkiyahu HaMelech brought down the moral of the entire people because he was taken into captive, he was blinded and kept in Babylon at the time. He says, why? Because what's happening over here is it breaks the standard of the people. And he goes so far as to say that when in war, the Gemara in Shavuos says that a king who loses 1/6 of their troops is not held accountable during a war. Meaning, war is war. War is terrible. Meaning, there are certain things necessary to do. If you're going to win a war and you have a certain goal in mind, sometimes, unfortunately, there are casualties. And what Rav Aviner essentially says is that when it comes to leading a country, it can't be led with emotions, it needs to be led with intellect. And when it comes to intellect, the policy should be is that we don't negotiate whatsoever. We will fight and do everything necessary to return a hostage, but we will never accede to demands, because that itself breaks the morale of society itself.
You lose more men. They were willing to take whatever it was for Gilad Shalit, but you would have lost more men by fighting.
So the way he puts it is, and this is what he says, is you will either fight the necessary to get him back or leave him. His point is that the answer is that we do what's necessary in a war effort. And what's necessary in a war effort is we'll either fight as necessary to get him back, or he should know, like he says, when a government employs a spy, a government employs a anybody who's going to be working on, what's the government say? We're going to disavow you should you be captured. Meaning, we have no relationship to you. Meaning, you're only as important to us when you're working for us, but you're not going to cripple our system when you're for captive. So that's what the government says, and that's what he feels that the policy should be necessary over here to run a society. The reason this is important is just to see the complete opposite spectrum. What the Rav Avadia is doing is he's saying from a halachic perspective, if we analyze it all, you see a lot of poskim who say that sakonas nevoshes is a mitigating factor. What Rav Aviner is saying is that may be true, but look at the ramifications on leading a country. When it comes to leading a country, the goal should be the success of the country, not necessarily the specifics, and unfortunately there are casualties in war. Now, what policy and what public policy isn't our discussion. We don't set that. But at the same time, it's worthwhile thinking about these two very different perspectives along the spectrum when it comes to this. What lays ahead for us is to really contemplate the other part of it, which is, can you endanger certain people for the potential danger, for the definite danger of others, which is really the next part of this. I thank you very much for being here.